Carolyn Spiro and Pamela Spiro Wagner are twin sisters. They're also the co-authors of Divided Minds, Twin Sisters and Their Journey Through Schizophrenia. The Spiro sisters told Anne Strangechamps that they did indeed feel a special connection as twin sisters when they were growing up in the 50s. Carolyn began the conversation.
I would say definitely. I mean, I would say that we felt each other's feelings, felt quite connected in a way that I certainly never felt with anybody else, at least as a child. Pammy?
Well, I know our mother felt that she would never have known the mothering instinct until she had two other children because she felt like it was two against one from the beginning.
Right.
And it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was. We had each other.
At what point did that sense of each other's minds, feelings, et cetera, begin to go away? Because at one point, Pam, you're Pamela, you know, schizophrenia began. You began hearing voices. You began kind of heading into an abyss.
Yes. I think Lenny didn't understand what was going on around sixth grade when I began to feel that I'd killed Kennedy and that I was hearing things, and I didn't think she understood that. Of course, I didn't tell anybody, but...
Did you tell her?
No, I didn't. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone for a long time for a number of reasons, but I think at that point we were beginning to grow apart, or at least beginning to lose that sort of psychic connection.
You said those voices first appeared when you were around sixth grade or so. What happened later during your teenage years, high school and early college? What effect did the voices have on you?
Well, one of the most striking effects was in 12th grade, was it, Lenny, when I had the car accident?
Yeah, I think so.
In 12th grade, I was driving us to our orthodontist appointment, and I heard my headmistress behind us yell, "She's off on a joyride." And I took the corner too wide, and there was a motorcyclist coming up the hill. And I tried to put on the brake and heard the same voice of my headmistress scream, "Not that pedal, you fool, the other pedal." And so I immediately put my foot on the accelerator and plowed right into him. And basically, there was nobody behind me. So that was one time when the voices were devastatingly in their consequences.
What happened to the motorcyclist?
Well, he broke his leg and was in a lot of pain, but he was not badly injured, thank heavens.
And you still didn't tell anybody that you'd heard voices?
No. No, because that was far too dangerous. You know, I was afraid I'd get my license taken away from me.
Carolyn, how old were you and what was going on when you first began to come to terms with the idea that Pamela was really mentally ill, that there was something wrong?
Actually, the awareness sort of grew over the course of, you know, a decade or so. But the first time I saw her in the hospital and clearly catatonic, which is to say immobile, and couldn't really deny that she was sick, was in my late 20s, in our late 20s, and she was in the state hospital.
At that point, weren't you already either?
I was already a psychiatric resident.
All the way through your training?
I was in the middle of training to become a psychiatrist. When I chose to become a psychiatrist, I really didn't know that Pammy was seriously ill. I didn't go into psychiatry because of Pammy. I went into psychiatry because it was incredibly interesting, and I've certainly never regretted it for that reason. It's an incredibly interesting field.
Pamela, as you grew older, you know, and you were in and out of mental hospitals, how did the voices develop? Did it get worse? Did it get better? Did they get more abusive, less?
They became more insistent on my hurting myself. I mean, they'd always been very destructive in that sense. So I had enormous number of scars.
From cutting yourself?
Or from burning myself, where they'd have code words and they'd say things like, well, I can't remember what they'd say to get me to use a razor blade, but they'd say, burn, baby, burn, when they wanted me to burn myself.
If you did burn yourself,
then they'd shut up.
Better?
No, yes, exactly. They would shut up for either a long period of time or a short period of time. But it was basically with the, you know, Lenny always asks me, why is her voice not more authoritative than their voice? And it's a very difficult thing to explain. But somehow the authority with which they speak and the menace with which they speak makes them far more dangerous to disobey than anything that Lenny can say. And when you're in the middle of hearing them, Lenny's voice just goes away.
I guess I'm just too nice.
That or you don't live inside her head.
Well, yeah. That or I'd just sound a lot more dangerous.
Well, she doesn't sound dangerous, and nobody can possibly sound as dangerous as they do. And to correct you, these voices do not sound inside my head. They come from outside my head. I mean, I've realized in some part of my brain from a lot of therapy with my doctor that it's a brain disease, that it cannot come from the outside. Therefore, it has to start from a spark of, you know, an aberrant spark in the inside of your brain. But it sounds like it comes from the outside.
So when you're hearing it, it really sounds as though a person is standing, you know, just behind you or above you or whatever, but it's
or a radio inside the walls or people behind the walls. Or, you know, I mean, it can be explained as anything.
Pamela, one of the most chilling parts of this book is the description of the near-suicide attempt you made and the way in which the voices were very specific about how they wanted you to kill yourself. They didn't just say, kill yourself and leave it up to you as to how.
You mean with the hazmat man?
Mm-hmm.
And covering myself with Crisco?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yes.
That was actually short-circuited with shock treatments because it was going to happen. There was no way that I was not going to leave the hospital and not do that.
Can you describe what was happening? Who was the hazmat man?
The hazmat man was a little man that lived in the biohazmat sign. Nobody else could see him, but I could see him, and he was instructing me every day in more and more detail how to immolate myself. And he would say, you can fill a bathtub full of water, and once you're on fire, you jump in the water and you won't die. But you will be scarred for the rest of your life, and that will keep people away from you so that they know you're the devil. And later on, I did actually set my leg on fire preparatory to setting the rest of me on fire, only I put it out in time, but had third-degree burns and skin grafts and the whole nine yards. But I think that's what Lenny's referring to, because it wasn't suicide. It was basically in response to the voices.
And they were telling you to cover yourself in Crisco and then set it on fire?
No, this time it was with lighter fluid.
Carolyn, was it after that that you authorized electroconvulsive therapy for Pamela?
You know what? There were so many. I mean, the answer is yes, although I don't remember which time. There's so many incidents in between the hazmat man and now that I don't remember which one was the time that I had to authorize it.
It must have been terribly difficult.
It was. It was hard to watch. It was hard the night she called me. It's hard. It's hard to be helpless. It's hard to know that she's suffering. It's hard to want her to stay alive in spite of the suffering. It's hard to, I can't let her go. It's hard to insist that she stay alive when she says she can't. It's hard to keep the hope alive for her when, you know, in the face of something so incredibly awful, and yet I have to.
Yeah.
And I guess I just absolutely refuse to let go.
Pamela, are you grateful that Carolyn has not let go, or have there been times when you wish she had?
No, I'm very grateful that she's hung on. Very grateful that she's hung on.
How are you doing these days?
I'm doing fantastic. Probably the best I've ever done in my adult life.
Yeah, she really is. She looks great. She's doing great, really great.
One of the things that seems so amazing to me is that throughout, you know, this incredibly difficult path you've had to walk, you've also managed to become an award-winning poet. I wanted to close by asking you if you would read one of your poems. There's one called Fusion, which is, I think, about the experience of becoming ill and what it feels like.
Yes, I'd be happy to read that. Fusion. It was a frying pan summer. I was playing croquet by myself, missing the wickets on purpose, rummaging my pockets for dime-sized diversions. It was the summer of solitaire. I laid the cards out like soldiers. I was in command. Then you came out with a mallet and a stolen voice that seemed to rise disembodied from the gorge of your black throat, and you challenged me to a game. You ate me with your mosquito demands, though I didn't want to play with anyone. I hid my trembling in my sleeves, refusing to shake your hand. I thought, this is how the Black Death was transmitted, palm to palm, hand to hand, a contagion like money. You smiled the glassy grimace practiced for boys all summer in front of a mirror. If I looked you in the eye, I would die. I knew then all the sharp vowels of fear. It was late in the afternoon, and I was frightened when our shadows merged.
Pamela Spiro Wagner reading her poem Fusion. Pamela and her twin sister Carolyn Spiro are the co-authors of Divided Minds, Twin Sisters and Their Journey Through Schizophrenia. They spoke with Anne Strange Champs.